Welcome to Software Gone Wild, yet again in the security waters, and today we'll talk about something called micro-segmentation. Unfortunately, all the other co-hosts that are regularly sitting with me are too busy with Cisco Live Europe, so it's just me and my old friend Brad Headland. Brad, how are you doing these days?
I'm doing great, Ivan. It's good to be with you for the first time on your new podcast.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, we have to do this more often.
We do.
So what are you doing these days?
Well, let's see. I'm at the VMware NSBU, which stands for the Networking and Security Business Unit. And I've been there for over 2 years now. So I mostly go around and talk to customers, do whiteboard sessions, fart around, play with stuff. Occasionally write some blogs, have some fun, and get paid doing it. So life is great.
So effectively you're doing what you would be doing anyway and you get paid for that.
Sort of, yeah. I mean,
that's cool.
if I could really think of what I wanted to do, it might be, you know, sailing somewhere out on the ocean, but that doesn't pay too well. So
that gets boring after a while.
But yeah, so things are going well in the NSBU with NSX, and security is a topic, you know, at a lot of customers because of this capability we have in NSX called micro-segmentation, which I think is why you joined me to talk about that, right, Ivan?
Oh, exactly. So what is micro-segmentation? Let's start with this.
So basically, when we refer to micro-segmentation, there's several aspects to this. And at the most basic level, what it really is at the end of the day is the hypervisor is basically a platform. We know this, right? And it contains virtual compute. And now with NSX, it contains virtual network. Actually, even way before NSX, the hypervisor contained a flavor of virtual network in the sense that it had a vSwitch. So the minute you created your first VM back in 2005 or whenever it was, you were basically doing virtual networking, and your VM had this cable that connected itself to the network like anything else, but it's not a regular physical cable. It's basically a software cable, which is really the I/O path through the kernel and the hypervisor. So for the longest time, it was a very basic connection, and VMware really didn't do anything with it other than doing the basic job of providing connectivity between VMs. Now with NSX, you know, we're bringing a whole lot more functionality to the networking capabilities within the hypervisor platform. And one of those is, when we refer to micro-segmentation, is the ability to place a stateful, transparent firewall on that software cable that runs from the VM to the first port, virtual port, on the virtual switch. What you're able to do then is to apply a policy, kind of a central policy at the NSX manager, and then the NSX manager figures out where to push these rules down to, which host, and then the host figures out which actual VM needs a specific rule and programs that rule onto that transparent stateful firewall that's in the kernel on that software cable. And now you basically have stateful security at a granularity of a VM's virtual NIC. So if a VM had multiple virtual NICs, you'd have multiple instances of stateful firewall on each VNIC. The second interesting aspect of this, so you've got this granularity per VM. The other interesting aspect of this is that the firewall and the policy that you create for your firewall is now basically co-resident with the workloads that you are trying to protect, but still with isolation. So basically, your firewall is now in the hypervisor kernel, and we know that a VM has isolation from the hypervisor, right? So the firewall is not inside the VM. It's isolated from it. It's in the hypervisor. But the interesting thing is that the hypervisor knows a lot about the workloads that it's running on, right? It's basically hosting its memory space, right? It knows the types of VMs that are running. It's hosting all of their memory, virtual memory. It can know who's logged into a particular VM. It might even, you know, it can see all of the way that the VM is using its memory and identify interesting and unique aspects about a given workload. And all of this metadata that's in the virtual environment, like clusters and resource pools and VApps and things like that, all of that is now accessible to creating a firewall policy. So really for the first time, you've got, instead of the firewall being several layers away from your workload, several hops away, and having really no context at all, the only thing it can trigger on is IP addresses and MAC addresses and TCP port numbers. When you take the firewall and you shove it inside the hypervisor, you can trigger on a lot more context, like who's logged into that VM? Is it a Windows or Linux? Is it on cluster one, cluster two? Is it in virtual data center one or two? You know, so on and so forth. And you can create policy around that.
So what you're saying is that instead of just writing IP address A can talk to IP address B, I can now say that this group of VMs called web servers can talk to this other group of VMs called database servers on TCP port MySQL.
That's absolutely right. I, as the policy creator, suddenly do not care, or even I could even take a step further. The policy creator and the policy implementer do not care anymore really what the IP address of a VM is, because I create abstract groupings, like you said, and I apply policy around those abstract groupings. Like, here's the web servers for a web app, the web tier of an app, here's the app VMs for the app tier, here's the database VMs for the data, you know, write policy across that. Those VMs could reboot tomorrow, get a whole new address, could move to another pod in the data center, get a whole new address. As long as the policy moves with it, you know, it's the same security policy.
Okay, so let's start with the first part, the IP address changes. So yeah, from the vCenter perspective, from the management plane perspective, no problem. Now this group has different members. But in the end, somewhere deep down in some kernel module, you still have to filter on something that is in the packet, because I don't think that you add metadata saying this is coming from a web VM to the packet, or are you?
No, we are not adding any metadata to the packets. So yes, you're right, Ivan. At the end of the day, somewhere, somebody has to program a firewall rule. So I mentioned this transparent stateful firewall that is like a transparent tap between the VM and a virtual switch port. So we take all of this information around the policy, okay, you know, which VM is in which group and which protocols can it talk, and we know the IP address of the VM at any given time, and then therefore we can create the necessary rule, which includes source and destination IP address, source and destination TCP port numbers, and then program that at the appropriate host and appropriate VM kernel module. So if a VM IP address changes, well, we know, or vCenter knows about that IP address change, therefore NSX Manager knows, and then can update or change the rule under the covers, right under the hood. And it's not something that the policy implementer needs to go back and rewrite a firewall rule because an IP address changed.
So it's almost exactly like the object groups in Cisco's ASA or Palo Alto firewall. Only the object groups get updated automatically.
Yes. Yeah, I could absolutely. Groupings in terms of all the vCenter objects like clusters, resource pools, as well as groupings that you can create with microsegmentation. So we have a new grouping object called a security group. So when you have NSX installed with vCenter, you create these security groups, which are just abstract groupings for creating security policy that are totally decoupled from any network object. They don't translate into port groups, and you can have a whole bunch of these security groups you create, and then you define either statically or programmatically which VMs belong to these groups, and then you can define a whole series of policy actions on those groups. So one thing that we have in NSX Manager is something called Service Composer. And Service Composer is where you can really write policy. You can create these groups. You can decide how VMs are populated into groups. And then you can create firewall rules. You can create traffic steering rules. That's another thing I want to get to next is traffic steering. Introspection rules, where you have some third party looking at a VM and seeing if there's malware, if there's a virus on it, things like that. There's also a traditional firewall UI, right? So if you have NSX Manager, you'll see a tab there. It just says Firewall. If you click on that, if you know firewall UIs inside and out, you're very used to Checkpoint or ASA, you're going to see kind of that traditional firewall UI where you can write firewall rules using all of these vCenter objects and security groups, just like you would, you know, with a standard firewall UI.
But in the end, any object that the firewall works on is in the end always a list of IP addresses, right?
That's right.
So how do you get those IP addresses? How do you know what IP address a VM is using?
So there's two ways that it can be done. And the primary method, as most vCenter gurus know, to know the IP address of the VM, as well as a lot of other information, is having VM tools installed on your VM. So if you've got VM tools installed, vCenter knows about the IP address along with a lot of other information. So we take the IP address that we've learned from VM tools, and we can use that to populate these firewall rules because we know the IP of the VM. The other way to do it is through something called SpoofGuard, which is included with NSX. And if you're familiar with IP SourceGuard in Cisco or DHCP snooping, it's very much similar to that. We can learn the IP address of a VM by snooping its DHCP messages, or you can actually go into SpoofGuard and you can program in what the IP address of a VM is statically, either through a GUI or through API messages, however you want to do it. So as long as you have either VM tools or you have SpoofGuard enabled, you're good to go. vCenter and NSX Manager will know the IP address of all these VMs and then can correlate it to any vCenter object or all of these security groups that you've created to write these firewall policies for.
So now we know what we want to filter, and now we need to push this down to the individual hosts, right?
Yes.
I guess there's some proprietary protocol involved there.
I don't know if it's so much proprietary, but so how does that work? All right, so I create a, so first of all, when you have NSX in a vCenter environment, you are going to establish a plugin from your NSX manager to your vCenter. So you would go to your vCenter after the plugin's been installed, and you will see a whole new icon for NSX. And if you click on that, you're going to get a whole new UI. We're going to do all of your UI work with NSX. In that UI is where you'll begin to create these rules, like I've already mentioned, with Service Composer or with the Firewall tab. So when you do that, when you create these policies and you push them down, what happens is that NSX Manager will decide which cluster, if you have multiple cluster, these firewall rules need to be pushed to based on the actual VM that's going to have the firewall rule. So there's one thing is, the interesting thing about this microsegmentation is that you can decide, as I mentioned earlier, where do I actually apply this rule to? Am I applying it to a whole cluster, or am I going to apply it to an individual VM? So NSX Manager looks at that applied to and says, okay, I know which VM this has to go to. That VM is in cluster A. So I'm going to push this rule down to all the hosts in cluster A and not cluster B.
And you would push it down to all the hosts just in case the VM would move around, right?
That's right. So NSX works at the cluster level, right? When you install NSX, it presumes that you have a cluster, and you pick a cluster of hosts, and it will install the firewall kernel module, the routing module, the VXLAN module, the security module on all the hosts in that cluster, and after new hosts are added, it'll automatically install the firewall and all the other modules on any new host that's added. So we presume that there's a cluster in place. So it works at the cluster level. So when it pushes down a rule, figures out which VM that this rule will be applied to, which cluster it's in, and it will push down that rule to all the hosts in that cluster. For the very reason that you mentioned, Ivan, that we presume in a cluster there's probably going to be DRS, HA, a VM could pop up on any host in the cluster at any given time. And we don't want NSX Manager to be bothered with every VM migration within a cluster because we presume that could be pretty frequent. So push it down to all the hosts. Now that each host has the rule, there is a daemon on each host, the firewall daemon, which says, okay, I just received this rule from NSX Manager. I can see it needs to go to this VM here. Do I have that VM? I do. All right, cool. So I'm going, and it says here, apply to the VM's virtual NIC. So I'm going to populate my kernel firewall for that VM's connection right here, right? So each host then evaluates the rules that it receives from NSX Manager and decides whether it's going to program onto a VM or not. And should that VM not exist on a given host and it shows up later on from a vMotion event, well, then the host says, I do have this VM now, and I'm going to apply these rules. Actually, during a vMotion, the rules and the state table are vMotioned along with a VM.
So that was one of my questions. Thank you. So when you vMotion something, you are effectively moving the session state table together with the VM.
That's right. So there's basically two tables for this distributed firewall. You have the rule table, which is basically just a list of rules. A can talk to B on port X. B can talk to C on whatever, right? And then there is the actual connection table. So very first packet that a VM sends, it will be evaluated against the connection table. You could think of this as like a flow table. And this connection table is built for existing flows, and it keeps track of, okay, I've already done a lookup here. Here's a flow that already exists. Okay, this packet can go through. If there's a miss on the connection table, then it looks up on the rule table. So this might be the very first TCP send packet of the very first session. Does a lookup on the rule table, then creates an entry in the connection table, and then all subsequent packets will hit on the connection table. So when there's a vMotion from host 1 to host 2 in cluster A, you're going to do the normal vMotion stuff, as well as you're going to vMotion over the connection table to the other host so that all of the existing established connections are not disrupted and everything operates as normal as you would expect for the vMotion.
Nice. There was one other question I had with the vMotion stuff.
I bet you had this question in mind. Let me guess. What if you do a vMotion between clusters? Were you thinking that?
Okay. Let's go with that one.
Let's do that.
What if you do that?
So I mentioned before, you got cluster A and cluster B, right? And NSX kind of pushes these rules down on a cluster level. We presume that all kinds of automatic vMotions are going to happen inside of a cluster. That's why we populate all the rules and all the hosts in a cluster. Now, doing a vMotion from cluster A to cluster B is not an automatic thing. That's somebody where vSphere admin is going to go in there, right-click on a VM, and intentionally and manually move a VM from cluster A to cluster B. At least that's the general use case. So in that case, what happens is, now remember, that firewall rule that was affecting that VM is not in cluster B. So when the administrator wants to do the vMotion, vCenter knows about it. And vCenter tells NSX Manager about these vMotion events. And as NSX Manager says, okay, I need to now take that rule and push it down to cluster B so that it is available on the hosts in cluster B, such that when that vMotion completes, the rule is there, and as well, the connection table will be vMotioned over there, and it'll have a connection table to match up with it. So there is a dependency on NSX Manager being available when you're doing a manual vMotion between clusters.
Hold on. So what you're saying is that if you do vMotion within the cluster, the NSX Manager could even be down.
That's right.
But obviously, if you do vMotion between the clusters, the NSX Manager has to supply the new rules. So yes, it has to be up.
That's right. So that's the main point I wanted folks to be aware of, is when does NSX Manager need to be up during a vMotion and when does it not matter? Doesn't matter on vMotions within a cluster, between clusters. NSX Manager will need to be up.
So just to take a bigger picture, your vCenter can die, your NSX Manager can die, but the clusters will still work.
That's right. Totally out of the data plane. There's no packets that ever get punted to NSX Manager for evaluation. Once the rules are programmed in there, it's kind of like set it and forget it, and the data plane just works until there needs to be a change. Does like a new VM comes up or you want to create a new rule, you would need vCenter and NSX Manager up.
Obviously,
to do that.
Yeah. But the NSX controller has to be up so it programs the VXLAN tables, right?
No.
No?
Yes. The answer is no. So here's one thing about microsegmentation with NSX. It has nothing to do.
No,
with
no, no.
DX
I mean, I know that you don't need that for micro segmentation, mm-hmm. but for the regular packet forwarding, if you vMotion a VM, then the VXLAN mapping tables have to change. That's where I was coming from.
On the VXLAN side, yes. If the controller needs to update a mapping table on a host, it should be available to do so, yes.
Yeah.
And that's so there's a lot more emphasis on high availability of the controllers than there is on NSX Manager. Mm-hmm. So that's why you have
makes
three
perfect
controllers.
Sense,
yeah, exactly.
Now, a few other detailed questions. You mentioned that the firewall is running in the kernel.
Yes.
So there is no extra trip to user land for every packet like it was with the VShield app, right?
That is correct. That is correct. So for somebody who's familiar with the old VShield days, right? VShield Edge and VShield app. Everybody loved the VShield app, but the big downside to it was you had to install a VM on every host, and you had to steer all the packets from all of the VMs through that VM on every host, and it was kind of a pain, and the performance sort of sucked.
Not sort of.
Okay. Probably sort of was being a little too generous there. It sucked. So it was a great idea. Not many people implemented it. So really, with microsegmentation and NSX, that whole user space VM goes away. All of the stateful firewall packet inspection is in the kernel. And the installation, as I said earlier, is done at the cluster level when the cluster is established. So the minute you install NSX, you point at a cluster, it installs a firewall kernel module across a cluster. If a new host joins later on, just through host mechanics that's in vCenter, it's going to get automatically installed on that new host as well. So there's no installation effort, and there's no user space VM that you have to steer packets through. So for basic stateful layer 2 through layer 4 firewall, you have that in the kernel at, I'll say, close to line rate. So from one VM to the next, and not even just one VM to the next, if you have two VMs that are on the same VLAN or the same port group, you now have full policy control over that. Right? You've never had that before when you're bolting a firewall onto a VLAN somewhere on a switch. Right? It's always been, I can protect this VLAN from going to that VLAN, but anything happens inside that VLAN, I don't have any control over. You know, that's what we call trust zones, right? So there's...
Yeah, and I have great fun explaining how I can turn on IPv6 in a VLAN and have everyone numbered on the IPv6 side, and there are no IPv6 tables on most Linux hosts, so I have free entry to every host and so on. So yeah, great fun.
Yeah. speaking of IPv6, this kernel module is IPv6 capable as well. So if you want to write rules around IPv6, knock yourself out.
Does it also include the layer 2, the first hop security mechanisms like ND guard and the DHCPv6 guard and all the other stuff that we had in the IPv4 days, but most people forgot to implement it in the IPv6 side?
We can write rules around IPv6 addresses. The actual control protocols, I'm not sure of if we look at those or not. I don't have an answer for you that. Sorry, Ivan.
No problem. We'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we were doing ARP spoofing in the IPv4 world, and so we have the source guard and the ARP guard and whatever. And people are doing now the same thing in the IPv6 world with ND.
So the spoof guard I mentioned earlier is IPv6 capable. So
cool.
Maybe that answers the question.
Probably does.
Yeah, okay.
So you did mention line rate before, and so what line rate are we talking about? 1 gig or 10 gig?
We're always talking 10 gig, and basically it sort of depends on your packet sizes and your number of connections and things like that. Connections, the number of rules doesn't matter. So when I say line rate, when somebody says line rate, you should be able to say I can saturate the pipe, right, without any compromise at all. If it's a 10 gig, I should be able to get full 10 gig. If it's a 20 gig, I should be able to full 20 gig. So with the distributed firewall and all these kernel modules we're talking about, we can get close to line rate. So on a 20 gig capable host, get to about 18 gig of throughput, full distributed firewall, you know, running, you know, with rules and many connections and things like that. So there's a slight, you know, throughput tax that you pay in terms of turning these things on, but it's very minimal.
Any idea what the actual overhead is in the number of CPU cycles, percentage of CPU cycles, anything along those lines?
So a lot of that is going to be determined on the number of connections per second, how many connections you have to install in these connection tracker tables.
Yeah, because you have to scan the rule set, right?
And you have to scan the rule set and install connections. The CPU has to get involved in installing these new entries in the connections table. I would say worst case scenario, it could be 5% of CPU. Like I said, it all depends on your test setup and your traffic that you have. But average, in an average customer environment, 1-2% CPU. If you're really nailing up the connections, number of connections per second on a host, it could go as probably 5%. It again depends on your setup. If it goes up to 10%, then you're really doing some niche, non-typical things.
Or you're under attack.
I actually haven't seen these measured under attack situations. So if something is dropped in the rule table, I'm not sure what the effect on CPU is that'd be. But
yeah, you did waste the cycles.
We're not going to install any rules. So we're going to drop a packet in the kernel. We're just going to drop it. In fact, a lot of the drop connections we don't log. We don't even log them locally on the host. You can log them to a syslog server if you want to. So I guess it depends. I think the major hit there would be, are you logging those connections?
Oh, definitely. Then it will be a major hit.
Yeah, so you'd want to be careful with that. We're doing a lot of improvements to the performance of logging. That's one thing that we're working on. But generally, the CPU used on a host is not really taxing in terms of most people with their vSphere hosts. The CPU is pretty much sitting at 20-30%.
Yeah, really they have plenty of CPU cycles.
And the cool thing you can do with this is that you can set a threshold if you want to. So if you want to say, hey, if the distributed firewall is using any more than 2 or 3% CPU, I want to know about it and alarm that as a critical or a major warning. So you can set these thresholds through an API, and then you can be warned every time a host exceeds the threshold. So you've got visibility into that and you know what's happening.
Nice.
And if the CPU is pegged totally 100% and the distributed firewall cannot get CPU resources that it needs to install rules or anything like that, what it'll do is it'll fail, I guess what's the proper term, fail closed, where it will not allow any connections through.
Yeah, I would call that fail open because the circuit is open, but yeah.
That's right.
I had that discussion, so.
Is the door closed or is it open, or is the circuit closed or open?
Exactly.
Yeah.
We'll never get anywhere if we start discussing this religion.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in any case, I think that the virtual firewall will always get some CPU cycles because, after all, it's running in a kernel module.
It will have priority, yes. It'll be scheduled, by the way.
The other question I had was, you mentioned that it's stateful firewall. So how stateful is it?
So the distributed firewall is stateful in the sense that it keeps track of the TCP connection state, right? And it's not going to allow packets that are not conducive to the current state of the TCP connection, right? So it's looking for TCP SYNs, it's looking for ACKs, it's watching for other flags on the TCP connection. So if somebody tries to spoof the source IP address and, maybe even spoof the source TCP port number, if the connection, and sending in a SYN, or SYN ACK when the session's already fully established, all of those are going to be dropped. So it's looking for malformed packets. It's looking for anomalies in the TCP state, whether it permits those packets through. It's not just, looking at source and destination IP address and source and destination TCP port numbers.
So it's slightly better than reflexive access control lists would be.
Yes.
Does it look at TCP sequence numbers?
I do not see any information about that in the rule connections tables. If you look at the flow table on a host while it's running, you do not see sequence numbers. But that doesn't mean it's not looking at them. I don't not 100% sure on that. I don't think it does. I know it's definitely checking the flag state, mm-hmm. but I don't know if it's watching sequence numbers or not.
Oh, that would require reassembly and reordering of TCP segments. So you would have to run the full TCP stack on the in the kernel.
Yeah, I don't think it's doing that. I mean, it could be possible someday, right? It's all software, but...
why should you?
Yeah.
TCP stacks today aren't as bad as they were when we were running the pings of death. Okay, so I guess we sort of exhausted the detailed firewall questions.
I think there was one thing I wanted to kind of add about this whole capability mm-hmm. around microsegmentation is that what we're actually seeing and what I'm seeing in customer environments is that it has the effect of really simplifying the data center topology, like the not just the physical, but the virtual topology. Mm-hmm. Because you think, you know, at the end of the day, why are you creating all of these VLANs? You're trying to create VLANs because VLANs to this point has always been the best isolation mechanism. I don't want this stuff to talk to that stuff, so I'm going to put them on two different VLANs and I'm going to slap a firewall in between that VLAN, right? Or I'm going to create a whole new tenant and I don't want that tenant to talk to this other tenant, so I'm going to create a whole new other set of VLANs and sets of firewalls. So you have this VLAN explosion, VLAN exhaustion, people running out of VLANs. It's a horrible pain to create VLANs. And then so VXLAN comes along, right? And okay, now we're going to give you 16 million VLANs, and now here's an API that'll automatically create the VXLANs to kind of try and put a Band-Aid on a pain of isolation. So that really talks more towards a network virtualization, is the ability to create these separate address spaces through overlays to create isolation and segmentation, right? So with microsegmentation, we take that to the next level in the sense that if you have the ability to isolate and segment on the per VM basis with stateful firewall rules, as well as, and I didn't get to this point earlier, service insertion. Maybe I want some VMs to go through an IDS or IPS device or a load balancer. That same distributed firewall kernel module can also steer traffic to a user space VM to do additional processing. So you have the ability to insert security devices. You have the generic stateful layer 2 through layer 4 firewalls we talked about. And do all of this on a per VM NIC basis, suddenly the virtual topology doesn't really matter as much as it used to, right? Put all of your VMs on one VLAN. I'm just going to use an extreme example. Put them all on one VLAN, all in one port group. You've got different tenants, different applications, and you create the security groups, and you create policy around those, and you do insertion of IDS IPS through that. And now I can create three-tier apps isolated from another three-tier app, isolated from tenant number 2 with their three-tier apps. All of these VMs are all in the same VLAN, all in the same port group, but we've created the equivalent, if or actually better, isolation than of throwing up a whole bunch of VLANs and a bunch of ACLs on a firewall table. So a lot less VLANs, even a lot less VXLANs, and really just using the microsegmentation capabilities to present all of that isolation and tiering of applications.
So what you're saying is we no longer need VLANs or VXLAN segments as the segmentation mechanism. We might still need them to separate tenants if we don't trust this thing 100%, or we need them for routing to have different routing contexts, but we don't need them for security separation anymore.
That's right. We don't need them to distinguish one tier of the app from the next. We don't need them for service insertion to shove packets through a firewall to get, from point A to point B, mm-hmm. put onto different VLANs. We don't even need them to separate one tenant from the next.
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, what if this fails? I'm not saying your product will fail. I'm just saying that operators have fat fingers.
Yeah, true. Right? Anybody can make a fat finger mistake, whether it's at the CLI of a firewall or a GUI. But remember, all of this can be instrumented through API. So everything I've said you can do in a GUI, it's all exposed through an API, and you can have an upper layer orchestration system just doing automated tasks for this. So separating one tenant from the next, you could do, through microsegmentation, but the point I was going to make is that if they are using overlapping IP address spaces, then you would want to have them on separate VXLANs and separate virtual routers just so they can do their basic layer 2, layer 3. But the distributed firewall can still, because it has that applied to field on a per VM basis, even if you've got two VMs the same IP address, it's able to distinguish which firewall role should go where.
Oh, by the way, now that you mentioned multi-tenants, my biggest problem with VShield app was that it wasn't a multi-tenant solution. So you had one rule set for the whole vCenter environment. Is it any better now with NSX?
So one rule set. You basically have still one rule set, right? But we still can use it in a multi-tenant environment because these rules can be applied to individual VMs, right? So you can have a different rule for different VMs, even if they're using overlapping IP addresses. So we do have it deployed in multi-tenant environments that way. But at the end of the day, you've got NSX Manager with its set of rules. And so in that sense, it's still a single rule set, but it can be used in multi-tenant use cases.
Yeah, if you're careful and you do the API programming and you don't allow anyone to change the rule set manually, then you can make it safe enough, right?
Yeah, absolutely, through role-based access controls and all of that. Yeah. We generally would think of this as a kind of a service provider environment where the person implementing the rules is not the actual tenant, but is the provider of the infrastructure who is exposing APIs for the tenant to consume.
Anyway, another question that goes together with this configuration stuff. How do I monitor and audit all these per host firewalls?
So that's one of the cool things is when you have per VM granularity of firewall rules. So when you've got per VM visibility. So when you go into vCenter, and if you're looking at a particular VM in vCenter, you have visibility right there while you're looking at the VM. Okay, what firewall rules are applied to this VM and what traffic is running through those rules right now at this very moment? And is this firewall blocking any packets, you know, maybe from a fat-fingered rule or whatever the case is at this very moment, right? So as the vSphere administrator is clicking through looking at VMs, they've got a tab that they can click on right there and see flows, flow monitoring, and see all of the firewall rules, all of the traffic in real time, and actually, if they have the authority to do so, the permissions, they can create a firewall rule right on the fly. If they see a packets that are being dropped that do not match a rule, we will log that and show it. There's a little button there that says add rule. You could add a rule to permit that traffic through. The firewall, distributed firewall also has IPFIX export capabilities. So per flow, we can export out to an IPFIX collector, you know, whatever standard collector you have out there, so that, you know, the network operations team can suddenly get, you know, full per flow visibility on a per VM basis through IPFIX export, as well as, you know, doing standard NetFlow export on a VDS. You could do that traditionally if you wanted that as well. The visibility, oh, and the logging too. So every time you can log every single connection, whether it's permitted, whether it's blocked, what have you, to a standard syslog collection tool. And so you could, whether you've got Splunk in your environment or you've got something else, you can log every single connection and do analytics across that. Maybe you've got Log Insight, which is VMware's tool. Log all of these connections so that anytime a packet's being dropped, you can see that in a log. And you can run queries against it. So between the logging and the flow monitoring, I think the visibility is actually better than anything we've ever seen before in terms of, you know, a vSphere environment is concerned.
And then I got two questions from the Twitter feed because, you know, when we started, I tweeted, hey, guys, we're recording this. Any questions? And they're both the same. How do you combine this with non-virtualized workloads?
Yes. So as we've been discussing, this is a kernel module attached to VM, right? So on a physical host connected to a physical switch, obviously we don't have any control over creating a firewall policy on that host. So we can protect traffic that's going virtual to virtual or virtual to physical. So if that physical is talking to a virtual machine that's protected by distributed firewall, we'll block it when that packet reaches the VM. If that VM is trying to talk to a physical host, we will block the packet before it even leaves the ESX hypervisor, because we can write policies not only around VM objects and vCenter objects, but also around just standard IP addresses and MAC addresses. So we could take the physical host, take its IP address, put that in an IP set, and then include that in a firewall rule. Now, physical to physical, obviously there's nothing we can do about that, right? It's physical to physical. It's all like vMotion, right? Can you vMotion from a physical machine to physical machine? No, you can't, right? But the microsegmentation is kind of like vMotion in the sense that it brings this whole new level of capability to the virtual environment that makes the virtual environment better, right? But of course, you know, it's not going to extend to physical, but that doesn't mean that you should, you know, postpone everything and not implement it just because you're waiting for some magic solution that does, you know, virtual and physical, right?
Yeah, well, having something is always better than having nothing.
Right, right.
So you can effectively protect anything but physical to physical.
That's right.
And obviously the physical part of the infrastructure has to be as secure as the virtual part, which means if you don't have IP source guard on the physical end, obviously you won't be able to do much about the packets with spoofed IP addresses coming in from the physical side of the network.
Well, spoof guard would register an IP address with a VM. I'll have to look into that. That's an interesting question, actually.
And finally, you mentioned something called traffic steering, which to me seems like policy-based routing. Am I too far off?
Well, it's a lot more automated and easier to implement than policy-based routing, right?
Well, because hopefully.
So basically, it's in that service composer I discussed earlier where you can create these security groups and you can say group A and group B, and group A can only talk to group B on port 80 or whatever it is. You can also say on a per VM basis, I want certain type of traffic, maybe it's all the port 80 traffic, to go through a next-gen firewall. And that next-gen firewall would be maybe a Palo Alto virtual machine, for example, that's on the host. And so what we would do in the kernel there is we would steer that traffic to a local user space virtual machine on each host, which provide things like IDS, IPS, or full layer 7, you know, deep packet inspection of a HTTP header and things like that. So we're doing that today with Palo Alto Networks, where they will deploy a Palo Alto virtual firewall on every host in the cluster. And then when you go into the NSX UI under Service Composer, you can decide which VMs and on which traffic will have their connections steered through the kernel to these Palo Alto virtual firewalls. And what we'll do is we'll actually share our group membership information with the Palo Alto administrator, right? So when you create a security group within NSX, it shows up in the Panorama security administration screen as a group that they can then write policy to. So if I create group A and group B, they will see group A and group B in Panorama, and then the Panorama administrator can write a firewall policy across group A and group B.
By the way, if anyone wants to know more about that cool feature, we did a whole episode. It is episode 18 of Software Gone Wild with Christer Swartz from Palo Alto, and he went into great details on how that exactly works. A question that came to my mind, if you're doing traffic steering, does the target, like the Palo Alto firewall, have to be on the same host, or can the target be somewhere else?
Right now, the target would be on the local host. So we would presume that whatever service box that you want to steer to is a user space VM on that local host.
Which works okay with a firewall and probably works okay with an IDS device. But what about a load balancer?
So we don't have any implementations right now of a load balancer like that. You know, load balancing it's tough, yeah. But we talked about distributed firewall for much of this episode. It wouldn't be impossible to also use sort of the same sort of mechanisms to distribute, you know, a load balancer. So I think that might be a possibility sometime in the future as well, distributing more services like including load balancing. Certainly not without its challenges. Now, other things like IDS, IPS that are really, you know, intent stateful in that sense, where you're looking deep into the packets, that'll be tough to distribute. That'll always be something that's going to some sort of box or virtual machine. So yeah, we presume everything's local, because that way we don't have to, you know, slap any headers on anything. The partner just registers with vCenter as being a service provider for NSX. And then they say, we're going to provide the service on cluster A. And then vSphere does a job of setting up their virtual machines on all the hosts in cluster A. And then NSX is suddenly aware of it and is able to use it in its traffic steering policies and Service Composer.
Perfect. Now, just two minor questions. Just to make it clear, I don't need VXLANs to use this. I can have a traditional VLAN-only environment and still use microsegmentation, right?
Absolutely right. Yes. So this microsegmentation is totally topology agnostic. It doesn't care about the virtual topology, doesn't care about the physical. So that VM could be connected to a plain old port group on a plain old VLAN, because it's sitting on that virtual cable between the VM and the first virtual switch port. So all of the traffic permitting or blocking is done even before it hits the vSwitch effectively. So we really don't care what that vSwitch is doing, whether it's a VXLAN, whether it's a VLAN, which is really nice in terms of being flexible to adapt to certain environments. So we have some customers that are doing that, that are not doing any VXLAN. They're just doing the traditional old VLANs. They need a lot less of them now, because now they've got all of this isolation and segmentation through NSX that they didn't have before, and they can do it on far less VLANs. You know, just set up a couple of infrastructure VLANs, create one VLAN that says VM data and put all your VMs on it, and just go knock yourself out with security groups and distributed firewall.
And final question, now that you mentioned plain old, can this thing run on plain old vSphere, or do you need NSX for microsegmentation?
Requirements. You need vCenter 5.5. So that's an NSX requirement. So yes, you need NSX. You need NSX 6.0 or better. And a requirement for NSX 6.0 is you need vCenter 5.5. On the ESX hypervisor side, you need ESX 5.1 update 2 or ESX 5.5. So if you're going to do it on ESX 5.1, that means you are going to just be doing microsegmentation only. You're not doing VXLAN. You're not doing logical routing or any of those things. You're just doing distributed firewall. And you can do that on your ESX 5.1 hosts or better.
So on 5.1 hosts, I cannot use all the VXLAN-based goodies, but I can still use the firewall module with microsegmentation.
Absolutely right. Yep.
And I guess I need the Enterprise Plus license, because this whole thing is running on the distributed switch, right?
Yes. So the requirement is that the VM is connected to a vDistributed switch. So to get the vDistributed switch, you have to have the vSphere Enterprise Plus license.
Perfect.
There's one last thing I wanted to point out, Ivan, before we finish. And that is that we've been talking a lot about, you know, this kernel module and it looking at source and destination IPs and checking the flow of traffic as it goes through this kernel module. But getting back to my earlier point about the hypervisor kind of being co-resident, or the firewall being co-resident with the workloads, and these partners that can integrate with us, like not just Palo Alto, but also McAfee or Symantec. So now what you can do, security is not just about checking the packets and saying, ooh, this packet looks nasty or that packet looks good, right? Oftentimes, you've already got a security problem before the first packet touches the wire, right? Somebody's gotten into that workload and they've installed some malware, or they've installed some malicious software on a VM, and that is your security problem. And then from that point, they start using the network to discover other things in the data center, which may or may not look malicious to a firewall rule. So what can happen now is these third parties can detect malicious code on a VM without an agent installed on that VM. And all they have to do now is, if they don't like something about a workload, all they have to do is flip a bit in metadata. And one of those bits is called an NSX security tag. So each VM is going to have this capability to have a tag set to it. And they say, ooh, VMA, that one doesn't look good. VMA, NSX security tag, virus found, malware found. And then that can be instantly triggered in a firewall policy through the distributed firewall. So as soon as that tag is applied, you can pull that VM right off the network or put it in a quarantine zone or something else. So this ability to act on metadata and have the firewall react to that, it's really, you're basically using the firewall not as trying to find a problem, but to react to a problem that's already occurred, even be, you know, that's not even in the network layer. It's in the inside the workload.
So you effectively implemented the evil bit.
Exactly. The bad guy found, blow this thing up, take it off the network without having to do any fancy protocols or anything like that. It's just metadata.
Nice. So if someone wants to find out more about this, where can they start searching?
Probably the best place to go is, I'll just plug the company's URL, vmware.com/products/NSX. Best place to click on there is technical resources, and you'll see a lot of cool white papers on a lot of the things we've discussed. You can also check out my blog, bradhedlund.com. I don't blog that often. You can check out Scott Lowe's blog. You can check out a lot of other folks who've been blogging. I'm trying to think of some of these days. There's a lot of VMware NSX SEs. We got a lot of really awesome SEs that are starting to blog. And you know what I need to do is create a list of all those guys and link to them.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's Dmitry. There is Anthony.
Yep, Anthony Burke, yeah. Dmitry Kalantsev.
There's you. There's Scott.
I'm afraid to say their names. I'm afraid I'm going to like mangle them up. But we've got some guys. You know, Philip Vilroy, I think is his name. Roy Ben, can't remember his last name, Benham, I think, out of Israel.
Yeah, it would be great if you could just write a short blog post with all their names, and I'll include that in the show notes.
Yes.
So you already told us how to find you on the internet. What about Twitter?
Twitter's at Brad Hedlund. BRADHEDLUND.
Any other social networks where you're active where people can find you?
No. I just occasionally log into Twitter and cause trouble there. And that's about it.
Yeah, particularly with a certain opinionated individual that we'll not name today.
Oh, it's all fun.
I know.
Yeah.
So we were causing problems like 5 years ago, right? And now you took it over to someone else. Okay, so Brad, thank you for this. By the way, if people have follow-up questions, where can they send them?
They can just tweet me, I guess. Tweet me at Brad Hedlund on Twitter. It's probably the best place.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you. And for those who just stumbled upon this podcast, I'm Ivan Pepelniak, and I'm regularly blogging at ibspace.net, and I am irregularly on Twitter, unless someone sends me a tweet, in which case I usually respond. And if you want to know more about this podcast, go to podcast.ipspace.net. And if you want to know more about SDN, there's a whole new page of SDN resources at sdn.ipspace.net.